good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about adversity, overcoming adversity, even in childhood, finding your purpose, overcoming and getting past non-healthy, unhealthy situations. I find that in order to do that, we have to realize what healthy is, how to be healthy, then practicing it, then continuing to practice it, and then when we find ourselves backtracking or getting off track, we go back to being healthy, to being respectful of ourselves, to understanding who we are, how we stop, we don't internalize negativity, how we find self-belief, and we follow our passion and we don't give up. And I find it interesting in life how many of us, the majority of us, I believe, do this. And we all go by different ways of doing it and we create a different life. But when it comes to being a survivor, when it comes to, you know, being in hell and walking right out of it and finding yourself in an amazing place because of your work and your dedication and your belief to yourself, I find that magnificent. And I find that there are people all over this world that we can talk to and we can listen to and we can learn from. And I find it interesting how some people, it was against all odds for them to even be alive, much less be as successful as they are now. And when I find and I stumble upon somebody, and it's not really stumbling upon anything, right? It's all about purpose. It's all about being in the right place at the right time and being aware. Because I find that awareness is one of those things that a lot of us don't put a lot of, I don't know, we don't really think a lot about it. And I find that to be a problem. Because I find that when we are aware and we see things and we are cognizant of the things that we're coming into contact with, we have a greater understanding of what's happening. We get a greater understanding of the complexities of our life and we get a greater understanding of what we actually have options of having. But I think too, there's two layers of life, is that sometimes once you realize that you actually do have power, you sit there and feel like maybe you feel this way because you have thoughts of grandeur. And then some of us just don't want to even deal with that or participate in that and don't understand it because we weren't raised to believe that we have any power. And I find it very interesting. I love to talk to people from all walks of life, of people that have overcome adversity and are still doing it and still doing things that impress and that inspire us to continue to do the same. Because that's really what it's all about. There really isn't any degrees of separation in reality. We're all part of the whole, right? We're all part of the group. That's what it's all about. And we're all living this life. And there's really a type of purpose behind all of our lives. And there is kind of more of a marriage of ideas as far as kind of the direction of where we're kind of supposed to go. And so I find that very interesting when I come across somebody that I find has a very prolific life and is really, you know, was very much challenged in their childhood and had to overcome a lot of adversity to become the person that they are today. Joining me tonight is somebody that I've been very interested in. You know, you come across certain books and you come across certain things. And recently I was traveling to see my grandmother and I was in the back seat and my aunt was driving and I saw this book in the back of her car. And the title of it was 90 Minutes in Heaven. And I saw that the writer was Don Piper with Cecil Murphy. And I read the book. It took me about 3 hours to read from cover to cover. And then I got interested in both of the individuals on the cover. And then as I did some more research, I got very interested in Cecil Murphy. When somebody is as prolific as this gentleman, you've got to find out more information. You just have to. You just can't let it go. And so I went on the website, and I went to Google, and I looked for Cecil Murphy, and I found all this stuff, and I can't believe he's written, I think, over 180 books. And we're going to talk about that just in a little while. But I want to know more about him. I want to know more about what got him into writing and the challenges he's been through in his life to be able to be this prolific, but also to be able to carry through this thought into a book for us to be able to read. Joining Live Your True Life Perspectives, Cecil Murphy. Cecil, it's so great to have you here live on Perspectives.
Hey, actually, I think it's a privilege to be on your program. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm glad to have you on. And, you know, first off, wow. Okay. Wow. You know, I've written three books so far, and that was a labor of love, and that was a lot of work. But how many books have you written?
First let me say, you know, we all have different gifts, and this is a gift that I have, and that's who I am. But I've actually written 137 books.
Wow. Wow. What was the first book that you wrote?
It was a book nobody ever heard of, for which I am quite grateful. It was a religious publisher came to me with a book called Prayer, Pitfalls, and Possibilities. It wasn't very well written, but it was a beginning.
That's cool. That's very neat. So tell me more about what got you into writing. Was this a childhood thing? Did this start as a child?
Well, yes. Yeah, I'm one of those people I can't remember when I didn't want to write. Even as a kid, in school, I wrote stories, and of course, the teachers all loved them. They were probably pretty dreadful, but they, you know, keep doing that. And then when I got in college, I loved doing essay tests because I always got A's on the essays. And then when I got graduate school, I really got the accolades. So, you know, it was just kind of one of these days when I finally got the place where I thought, I really want to write for publication. And so I started learning to write. I really worked hard at it.
I think we all do have certain, you know, gifts, and I think we all have a true purpose and calling in life. And, you know, I think it's interesting when somebody follows their calling so directly. I mean, don't you feel that maybe this is obviously part of your purpose and direction in life?
Oh, yeah. You know, I taught in the public school. I was an adjunct professor in college part-time for 18 years, and I've always enjoyed that, but nothing has ever satisfied me the way writing does.
That's neat. So let's talk about, you know, a lot of us who really follow our purpose, and I know that a lot of my listeners right now can understand, you know, life to some degree when we're younger and throughout our life might not be easy. It can be quite challenging. And some of those challenges and some of those early on, I'd like to say, you know, just issues and things that really happened to us and maybe things that we didn't deserve really do shape not only our life, but shape our perspective. Can you talk a little bit about your childhood?
Well, you know, I think typical of a lot of writers, I had a miserable childhood. I had an alcoholic father. I was sexually assaulted by a female relative, and then we rented a room to an elderly man, and he also sexually abused me. So I had that horrendous kind of childhood, which I think is very common among writers, not particularly abuse, but just miserable childhood. And I think one thing that happens to many of us is that writing becomes a way to find out, you know, who we are and to deal with our pain, even if we're not aware that that's what's going on. I think it's a big factor.
I agree with you, and I think writing is, you know, very therapeutic. I'm also a therapist, and so when I'm working, especially with child patients, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about, we write, and we draw, and different things that really help to get emotion out. And so what are some of the favorite things, you know, that you like to write? I mean, what's something that really just sparks you?
Well, let me just say, see, I make my living as what is off what used to be called a ghostwriter. Now we're calling it a collaborator. Ghostwriter meant nobody knew you wrote it. I never thought about becoming one. I knew what they were, but I somebody put me in contact with a New York editor back in the early 80s, and so I sent him my novel, he came to Atlanta, where I lived, to visit me, and he said, you know, I like your writing okay, but it's too slow for today's market. And I thought, well, why are you coming to Atlanta to tell me that? And he said, but I like the way you write about people. I think you understand people. I'd like you to become a ghostwriter for us. So I said, sure, why not? And, you know, once I started, I realized I really love doing it. I did 35 books for that publisher. And what I realized, Ashley, is that I have a real pull toward the underdog, you know, my own case, of course, but the books that I've done the best with in terms of my writing have been stories about those who should never have made it.
That's awesome. I mean, obviously from your own childhood, I mean, everything was against you. I mean, you know, you were dealing with the sexual assault, you were dealing with an alcoholic, abusive father. There was all these different dynamics that...
And physical beatings.
Oh, wow. At what age did you finally get yourself out of that family dynamic?
Oh, I got out. You know, I didn't realize how dysfunctional we were, except I read a lot as a kid, and I went to movies, and I realized that our family wasn't normal. And so as soon as I finished high school, I enlisted in the Navy to get the GI benefits, because I determined I would never ask my parents for money. They probably could have afforded it, but I just decided I would never ask them and make my own way. So I got out of there, out of that family dysfunction at age 18, and I'm so glad I did.
And I think there's a lot of people that can resonate with what you just said, because, you know, childhood, I mean, I had a decent family, but I still went through issues. But, you know, I see clients all the time that it's just amazing.
Sure.
That they were able to make it, you know, to hear, to be able to see and identify the fact that it wasn't their fault and that they can still and will make something out of themselves.
Yeah, and you know, and I think too often as kids, we, you know, we're so ego-centered that we think everything's our fault. And I think part of what I had, I don't know that, and I think a lot of this crazy stuff I did think was my fault, but I also knew that there was something strange about our family.
And it was awesome that you have the ability, though, to realize, and because I think that some of us, and I think all of us to some degree, are very intuitive, and when we're able to see, though, that the things that are happening aren't necessarily because of us, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's like when as adults now we say, well, it's not all about me.
That's right.
So let me ask you, what are some of the most recent books that you have co-written that you are very proud of?
Well, it's not a recent book, by the way, but I wrote Ben Carson's autobiography called Gifted Hands back in 1990. It's still my favorite book. It was the easiest, maybe I shouldn't tell this, but it's the easiest book I ever wrote, because even though he's moving into the political arena now, this has nothing to do with that. This was a man who overcame all the odds of childhood, impoverished, no education, you know. It was so inspirational to me, and he was so wonderful to work with. We met in a motel in Baltimore, because he was a doctor at Johns Hopkins University Hospital. And I don't remember exactly how long it took, but in about 3 days, working like 15 hours a day, I got all the stuff I needed from him. That's never happened. Never happened that way before or since. He was just so easy to work with.
That's interesting. You know, I don't know a lot about Ben Carson. I probably should be a little more educated. I seem to know a little bit about everybody's backgrounds. What were some of the things that, you know, he went through as a child that you wrote about in the book?
Okay. First, he was born, he's African-American. He was born in the ghetto of Detroit. His mother worked for wealthy Detroit people, you know, automobile people. So she kind of knew how upper class people lived. And in fifth grade, Ben was at the very bottom of his class. And she found out about how these people did. So she went to him and she said, Benny, you and your brother are going to have to, you're going to go to the library every week and you're going to take out two books and write a book report. Now, his mother was one of 23 children. She'd only been to third grade herself. And it never occurred to Ben that he could disobey his mother. So he did exactly what she told him, every week, two books. And by the time he finished fifth grade, was in sixth grade, he was the top of his class because of his reading. And by the time he finished high school, he won a full scholarship to Yale. So, yeah, and he had, you know, and he had some personal problems, a lot of anger and so on, and he dealt with those. Until he retired a year or two ago. He did surgeries that very few other people could do. He's a pediatric neurosurgeon, and he could remove up to half their brain with no, you know, because of tumors, with no side effects, which is almost, it's nearly impossible, but somehow he can do it.
Wow. It's amazing the things that we have, you know, overcome, and individual stories are always amazing too. And it's interesting. I mean, just as a sidebar, you know, those are things that, you know, unfortunately you don't hear about that much in the news, even during this election time, when you think about that kind of stuff. And those are things that, you know, I would like to hear about. That's human interest stuff that makes me, makes me like somebody a little more.
Sure. Well, let me tell you about one more recent book. There's a woman named Katarina Rosenblatt in the Miami-Dade County near Fort Lauderdale, who became entrapped in sex trafficking when she was 12 years old. Very lonely girl. She'd been sexually assaulted by her father and some neighbors, and very, very lonely. And this sex trafficker, beautiful blonde, 18 years old, came and recruited her, made her, you know, became her friend. And within no time, she was into the sex trade. They kept her into it by feeding her all the cocaine she wanted. And for about 10 years, she was a sex slave. I mean, like anything you've read about. And then finally, she just absolutely broke through. Now, she broke away three different times, but the first two times they brought her back because she was still hooked on cocaine. The third time, she actually just broke away from it, and which is nearly impossible, but she absolutely kicked the cocaine habit without going through any kind of withdrawal. And she had dropped out of high school in eighth grade. She took a GED. After that, she went and did an undergraduate degree, a master's degree, and in 2015, she received her PhD. And today, she works with other survivors of sex trafficking.
Wow. Wow. Golly. That's a big change, and that's rare to hear. That's a major success story. When did y'all write that book?
I'm sorry?
When did y'all end up writing that book? Is that a recent?
Oh, yeah. It came out in the fall of 2014, or I think that's when it was. It's called Stolen, The True Story of a Sex Trafficking Survivor.
Oh, wow. I'll have to check that out. I know that a lot of my listeners are very interested in that, because it's really interesting when people can overcome those situations and move forward. So let me ask you, you know, you're so prolific and you've worked so hard and you've done so much work and you've been involved with so many people's lives and telling the stories of all kinds of things. What are you working on right now, or what does the future hold for you?
You know, actually, that's a good question. I decided last year that it was time to slow down. I've been doing this full time for 32 years. By the way, I'm 83 years old, so it's, you know, chronologically, it's time. But you know, I still have a lot of energy, and I'm highly self-disciplined, those kind of things. But I still feel I want to just slow down and enjoy my life. So I have a couple of projects I'm just starting to work on, but I don't even want to talk about them yet because I don't talk about what's in progress. But I'm just slowing down, and I'm enjoying the way every morning I pray, God, help me to work less and enjoy my life more.
That's neat. What, tell us a little bit about your morning routine. You know, all of us have kind of this morning routine, and I think a lot of people that are listening that might be a writer as well or an aspiring writer might be interested in your routine and kind of your daily kind of form of action.
Well, good question. You know, we all have a different way of looking at life and a certain amount of self-discipline. See, I have three gifts. I'm highly self-disciplined. I have a lot of energy, and I'm fast at everything I do, so that works certainly for my benefit. But when I first started writing, I was so busy at other jobs, I just made sure I got about 30 minutes every morning before I went to work, and then it became 45 minutes and an hour, and then finally in 1984, I just walked out of everything else and became a full-time writer, which I've been since. But for me, it works like this. I get up early in the morning, like 4:30, 5 o'clock, and I'm a runner, which I think physical exercise is so significant. And so I run 4 to 6 miles every morning, come back, breakfast, so on. And I used to be at my desk by 7 o'clock, but as I said, I'm slowing down, so now it's like 8:30 or 9, because I sit around, do a lot of reading, do things like that. But I also make sure I read every day, because as a writer, I need to keep learning and filling the well. But I work till maybe 1 o'clock, stop for lunch, maybe take a nap, maybe just read, something like that. And about 4 o'clock, 5 at the latest, I turn off my computer for the day, and then I relax. I'll watch TV, read some more. I might even go for another run, go to a movie, go out to dinner with friends, that kind of thing. And that's how I do it.
I think that's interesting. I'm a big believer, and I know for a fact how well exercise works. And it's funny you brought that up, because I have clients that come in for their first appointment, and they'll be like, yeah, I can't sleep, and I can't get things done, and I'm having, you know, this type of problem and all these things. And I'm like, okay, first off, before we even talk about medication or anything, do you exercise? And usually the answer is no. I do not.
Or I should, but I don't.
Yeah, it's always I should, or, you know, I'm really going to get to that, or I used to, but I don't anymore. And it's like, well, that's the key, I think, to having a balanced life, to having a mind that works, and to having a body that can get some sleep, but also to be invigorated. And it's wild. So you run 4+ miles a day. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and also, you know, there's another thing, and that's I maintain a healthy lifestyle. I eat very healthy. I started working on this nearly 30, 40 years ago, but about 25 years ago, I became a vegetarian. Not that you have to be a vegetarian, but that has also increased my energy and my I just feel better about life, about myself.
Let me ask you, as a vegetarian, and so it's interesting you brought that up. I actually practice being a pescatarian, so I do vegetables and fruits, but I also do fish. So do you see a huge increase in your energy and just better feeling all in all being a vegetarian?
Oh, yeah.
And how long did you used to eat meat, or was that, how long ago was that?
Well, I tell my friends, I had a hamburger in 1987. actually, I've been a vegetarian since 1992. And, you know, actually, I don't think everybody ought to be a vegetarian. I know this works for me. And I know I'm really healthy. And I did work with the Seventh-day Adventists. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are two things. First, they're, as a control group, they're the healthiest people in the world. And second, a large percentage of them are vegetarians. So I learned a lot from them. Ben Carson's a vegetarian. And I learned a lot from those folks because I did several books with Adventists. And what I learned is if you eat a wide variety of vegetables and fruits and grains, you don't need to worry about anything else. Just eat widely, and you get all the nutritional value you need.
I can see that, and that's thing. I haven't had a I think a hamburger. The last time I had a hamburger was back in middle school when my dad made one on the grill. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And it's like, you know, it's like I'm not interested. I'm big on meditation, and so I find that, you know, the beef and stuff like that, it's there's a heart space thing that I can't get over if I try to eat that.
Yeah, well, and you said something significant. You know, you said just no, not interested. And see, when I became a vegetarian, I made this promise to myself: if I wanted a hamburger or steak, I would eat it. And I just haven't wanted it. I used to be a big ice cream eater. I haven't had ice cream in probably 5 years. And it's not, yeah, it's because I'm committed to live as healthy as I can. As I told you, I'm 83. I take no medications. I think the last time I was sick, I had an earache maybe 3 years ago.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Well, I do figure that a lot of times, unfortunately, we do create a lot of our own illnesses.
Of course we do. And you know, I know there's some genetic factors involved. Nor am I trying to make anybody feel guilty. I'm just saying that we have to take charge of our own health and our own lives. And that's what I've tried to do.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, because and I do think that sometimes when we realize the power we have within and the power we have, it makes it a little easier, but also it also takes it to the next level, and it kind of shows that we do have a responsibility, and it with more power and with the knowledge of having more personal power, there's more responsibility, and some people choose to see that and accept that, and some people don't.
Sure.
You know, and I find that, and I know that a lot of my listeners, I think, are at that point where they realize that, and they're making changes in their life to remedy that. Let me ask you a question. How are you living your true life on a day-to-day basis?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Okay, so I always ask everybody on my show, you know, my first book and my second book and my third book is all about how to live your true life. And in my case, the way that I'm living my true life is being authentic and being truthful and being honest with myself, because I realize that, you know, the most important relationship is the one with myself. And because that colors and reflects everything that I see in every relationship and communication I have, because when we're good with ourselves, you know, we're good with other people and we can understand. And so I always ask that question. Some people talk about exercise, other people talk about, you know, prayer, but how are you living your true life on a daily basis?
Okay, I do have prayer time every day. That's I am a committed Christian, and that really is important to me. My exercise program is terribly important too, because that's when I think I really get in touch with myself, and I learn about myself. I also try to read as widely as I can. I figure there are always people out there brighter than I am, and I can learn from them. So I read a minimum of a book a week, fiction and nonfiction. I'm committed to keep learning until I die.
I love that, and I think that's true, though. I mean, I think that honestly, as long as we keep learning, I think that's the key to having a successful life.
Right.
I really appreciate you coming on Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I feel that a lot of my listeners can really benefit from what you said. Is there anything that you would want to say before we end our interview today that you think might inspire people to maybe be, even if they're not a published writer?
Okay. I'll just say one thing, and you've already pretty well said it. Be true to who you are. You know, one of the things I committed myself to do is this. I want to be as transparent as I can be. Some people don't like that, but when people meet me, what they see is who I am. At least that's what I'm working toward. And that's the way I want to live the rest of my life. And I hope other people do the same thing.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and I so appreciate it. And I look forward to talking with you more here in the future, for sure.
Ashley, thank you so much for interviewing me. This is fun. Thank you.
I have a blast, too. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Okay.
Cecil Murphy. Cece is an amazing man. I'm impressed by him as a person, his authentic self, his true self. You know, and I think it's interesting, no matter what our age, when we really do focus on being the best we can and doing what's right by ourselves, we really do. We really go the distance. We go the distance. And I think that's so interesting. And I'm delighted that things happen in life. And what I mean is that, you know, we kind of figure that we kind of stumble onto things and it's just the natural progression. And, you know, when we go back to me being in the back seat of the car, and let me kind of explain what was going on, because I think this might also illuminate some of the stuff that's going on in your life, and it might also connect the dots to maybe some things that you want to follow through with or to be a part of, or kind of just shine some light on some things that we feel are maybe coincidences, but maybe aren't so really coincidental at all. So a few weeks ago, my mother and I were flying to Mississippi to see my grandmother. And my grandmother she'd fallen and broken her hip about a year ago, maybe less than that. And it was kind of a rough deal. And I know that if anybody's listening that knows if their mother or father had broken their hip, they kind of know the direction that things can go and the hopefulness that you have. And she's been getting better and better and better. She's still in a wheelchair, but she can get around in that wheelchair pretty good. But there were some other things that were happening too because of the medication that they were using and the pain medication. She was showing signs of Alzheimer's, dementia. And I knew that there must be something that could be done. And so we had worked with the doctors, and over a period of time before we came in town, they were able to recognize that, yes, indeed, that one of the medications was causing a reaction that was mimicking the onslaught of dementia. And so once they were able to figure that out and to stop that medication, her memory came back and her normal emotions and her normal activity came back. And so that was amazing. And so we came to visit her. And it's funny because I consider myself like a very good driver. I'm a driver. If I ever need a side job, I could be a limo driver as a stunt limo driver on MacGyver or something. Like, seriously, I can double park any single vehicle. I could double park a tank if I had to. I mean, I can drive all the way down a street, you know, backwards without hitting one thing in a limo. I mean, I can do that kind of stuff. I know, it's crazy. I mean, you know, where am I making the money on that deal? You know, I should be just, you know, just exit stage right and start doing that 24/7. But so you understand how it's like to be a driver like that and to be sitting in the back seat. And I'm sitting in the back seat, but I had stopped having any sort of expectations because I realized that when I expect things or, you know, you get upset about things or things happen, you know, they don't go that well then. So I just kind of let go of expectations, and I did a little kind of light meditation in that back seat, and I look down and I see this book, and it got my attention because it was a very neat cover, and I saw the fact that it said, you know, sold over 500,000 copies in print, and this book looks like it was probably, let me look over here, it looks like it was printed, let's see, 2004, so it's been a little while. And so I picked up the book and I saw 90 Minutes in Heaven, Don Piper with Cecil Murphy. And I kind of looked through the book as we're riding down the street, and we get to the medical facility that the home that my grandmother's in, and I brought it in with me. And on certain occasions when I wasn't really needed and I was kind of sitting in her room waiting, I read some of the book, and it wasn't until that night when I just couldn't put it down. And I wanted to do a little bit of research, and so I did some research, and I was talking about that earlier. And then it came across Cecil Murphy, and I got very interested. And then when I realized all the books that he's co-written, I was like, wow. I mean, it's a pretty amazing, that's a pretty amazing life so far to have all that going on. And he's still got more going. I mean, you know, he's still got more going. And he's kind of like me in that respect, is you don't want to count your chickens before they hatched. And it was interesting, on the way into the studio, I was listening to a person on the radio, I haven't ever heard of, I hadn't heard them speak before, but it was very interesting. And they were talking about, you know, different layers and different people and different situations in life and how to be aware of, you know, maybe what to give away and what not to give away and what to talk about and what not to talk about. And I think it's interesting. And I know I'm going off a little bit on one way or another, but I think this is an interesting concept. Is that there's some people out there that you really, you're so close to, and they have, as you know, everybody says, I got your back, man. I got your back. You know, they have your back. But I'm talking about, you know, like, they know who you are, and they care about you, and they love you. And you know for a fact that they're very good friends. They support you, and they're there for you. And I feel like those people, you know, you can kind of communicate with things that you might not other people. And I think there's different circles of friends and relationships that we have. And I think in these different circles and these different relationships, we're able to offer different things. We're able to associate with different things. We're able to elaborate on certain things. And I think that's interesting because, you know, I think that a dream that I like to think is a dream that kind of coordinates with purpose. And I think that all of us, I know all of us have a purpose out there. We all do, or we wouldn't be here. And it's interesting when we finally figure out some sort of idea about that purpose and we can converge that into our life. And I don't think that anybody can ever step in your way of your purpose. They can maybe make it a little harder to get to, maybe take a little longer. But I think for the most part, what if you know your purpose and you're destined for that and you believe in it and you work toward it and you work toward it on a daily basis and you have solid belief, nobody can take that away. And I think it's interesting as we go through life and we meet amazing people, and, you know, Cecil is a definitely amazing person that I think is very interesting. Because, you know, think about his life, and I think that we also need to look at our life with the same grace and understanding and belief. And I think it's so amazing to be so well-rounded. And I think that some of us do have a lot of responsibilities. We have a lot of stress. We have a lot of things going on. But I think that we can work to alleviate some of that stress and also take care of ourselves. You know, I'm a writer as well, and I'm not as prolific so far as Cease. I'm not as prolific right now as Cease is. I'd have a lot of books to write, about, what, 133 books to write? But I love writing. And even if you're not a professional writer, writing to me is very cathartic. It's very powerful. And it really does put things into utter perspective. And I think it's interesting because it also gets these thoughts out of our mind and onto paper. And it doesn't even have to be in a book form. It could be more like a journal form, like a journal format. And why I bring this up is that I think a lot of us have a lot on our mind. We have a lot on our mind, and because we have a lot on our mind, we have a tendency of being overwhelmed, of feeling stressed out, of feeling not understood, the inability to sleep, lots of stress on us, feeling stressed out, feeling, you know, upset. And I feel that when we write things down, we're able to take these things out of our mind, put them on paper. It opens up our mind more, that chatter begins to cease. And you're able to think about different things. And let me give you a good example, because I think you might be like, what is she talking about? For all you men out there who are on your way home and you get a text or a call from your wife saying, honey, I need you to pick up some stuff at the grocery store. Do you mind stopping? And you're like, no, I'll stop. You know, and when they call you and they say, well, I need you to get this, and that. And yeah, some of you are remarkable at lists in your mind, but some of us aren't. And the reason for that is it's very hard to hold several different thoughts in your mind. Okay. Even items for a grocery. It's difficult to hold those thoughts in your mind or those ideas in your mind. And so when we're dealing with a complicated situation or a stressful situation, that's why we have like that like ego focus. And the problem with having that ego focus is that we can't focus on anything else and we can only see the problems. We can't see the plausibility. We can't see the positivity. We see the problems and the issues, and we can only focus on that because that's what's taking up our mind share. And anybody that's gone through a stressful situation knows what I speak of. It's hard to let that go and let the rest of it in. And so, you know, maybe when you start thinking about it, you don't have to be a professional writer. You don't have to be at Cease's level that he's written 100-something books. But you can write a book or write a journal that's about you. That helps to express the relationship you have with yourself. Because I find that one of the most intriguing relationships we have, right? One of the most intriguing relationships we have is with ourselves. And why that is because it's the one person we're really supposed to get to know. Because we can't live in someone else's mind. And we're really not supposed to live for somebody else. And I hear these songs all the time on the radio that says, because you love me, now I'm complete, and all this great stuff. And unless it's talking about a higher power, I really think that this is not right. You know, our purpose, I think our genuine purpose, everybody's genuine purpose, is to understand themselves. To understand why they're here. That's purpose, right? That's also a form of purpose. To understand our emotions, our feelings, but to also understand ourselves separate from our body, but not in a way that we don't take care of our body. Because our body is basically that vehicle, right? That takes us from A to B, that gets us to where we need to go and all that good stuff. And so it's this vehicle that takes us in a healthy way. And if we take care of this vehicle, it will be there for a long time. But we also realize that once this vehicle passes, we still move forward. And I think it's a very interesting scenario that we're in. And if we're able to understand ourselves now, we can greater understand ourselves later. But also the reasons for our journey here. You know, if you haven't checked out my latest book, I'd love you to check it out. Go online and check out the 10-day challenge to live your true life. The 10-day challenge to live your true life. And you know, the 10-day challenge to live your true life is a book that it's really the mental, emotional, and soul boot camp that will help to transform your life. I believe that once we realize our power, our personal power within, we can begin to make changes in our life, to embrace our life, and to begin to see what we can achieve in this life. And I don't think that it should be a long period of time that it takes you to read this, so that it's another hurdle to get over to try to better your life, and you're trying to read 500 pages, and you're just like, oh my God. No, it's 10 days, and it's a really rapid personal growth day, basically day after day. And it keeps building on itself. And that's what we're doing. And remember how C said he keeps on learning. And you know what? We keep on learning until we die, because otherwise it's not a good life. I mean, we all must keep learning and growing and experiencing and seeing things and growing our perspective and being one with the stuff, because it's so impressive. I'm impressed day by day about our abilities. I'm impressed day by day about the powers we have. And I find it very interesting the use, the power we don't use. And I find it very interesting the powers we give away. How much power we give to other people over us. I find that very interesting. I find it very interesting how people are more easily giving their power away and thinking that's a good thing. And I know that there's two sides to the coin. One, some people don't believe that they have any power, therefore they don't know that they can even give it away. The second option is that they kind of realize they do, but they don't want to be responsible with the power. So they want somebody else that they can blame. And I find that interesting. I don't think that there's anybody that's is our cross to bear. I believe we are our own, right? Isn't that what life's about? It's about finding yourself, understanding who you are, getting to that next level in life. I like to call it leveling up. And being able to experience things on a different way, in a different form than accustomed to. And I find it so interesting, the more and more we develop our life and more we shape our personalities and our feelings about ourselves and our understandings with ourselves, I find it very interesting where we begin to lead our life to and who we begin to spend our life with. And I was recently in a session with a client, and we were talking, and his wife had left him for someone else. And she had children from a previous marriage before him. And he's like, I just don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can move on. And it has been about a year. And he said, I just don't know what to do. And I said, what would happen if she came here today and wanted you back? He goes, I would get on my knees and I would go right back with her. And I understand that, but I said, why is that? And he goes, because I found value in taking care of her kids and taking care of her. And I said, so basically what you find value in is purpose. And so basically your purpose ditched you. But is that really your purpose? Question mark. Think about it. I find that that's an interesting concept in life, that no other person can absolutely be your purpose. You might have a purpose of helping other people, but it's not that one person who is your purpose. And I find that we put a lot into that because we so badly want to know why we're here. We so badly want to understand what we're doing here, and we want to know the reasons for our existence. And when we find someone that might need our help or we want to help, we automatically extrapolate the fact that they are our purpose. And when they leave or they throw us away or they kick us to the curb, we feel as though our value and purpose has kicked us to the curb as well. And that's just not true. And I ask you to begin right now to realize the value that you have within and how it is not precursed. It's not segmented or initiated, better word. It's not initiated by someone else's need for you. And I presuppose the fact that if you really begin to realize who you are, you'll realize that you do have a universal purpose. And yes, it might hurt that that person left you, but your purpose did not leave you. That's still intact. What that is needs to be figured out and not extrapolated and placed on other relationships. And so I ask you to begin tonight and throughout the next few days and the weeks and the months and focus on what it is besides your job, besides the kids and the family. What is your distinct and utter purpose? And what can you begin to do right now and every day forward to get closer and closer to achieving that? I believe that we're put here for reasons. And it's not until we actually get the stuff done that we're supposed to, do we move on. And I just find it very interesting. And I think that there's so much to everybody. I think that we, as a species, as a human being, is very intricate and very dynamic. And it's for you to find that part of you and be able to resonate with you. And once you do that, you feel comfortable in your own skin. You're happy with your life. You're happy with others. And no matter what your childhood, no matter what your childhood, no matter what your family, no matter how abusive, disruptive, challenging you went through. We heard Cease, he went through a very challenging childhood with sexual abuse and physical abuse and everything you can think of. And he stood, and he was able to move out of that and create what he has. And he's done a spectacular job of it, a spectacular job of it. And I am extremely impressed. And you too have all the power in the world to overcome any situation and do what you need to do to find and live on purpose. For more information on the latest shows that I have out or on my recent blogs or articles in various newspapers and magazines, check out Ashley Burgess, AshleyBergess.com, AshleyBergess.com. Tweet me at Ashley Burgess and tell me what you would like to hear about or if you'd even like to be on the show. Also, follow me on Facebook, Ashley Burgess. I would love to follow you back as well. Stay tuned. I have a great show for you next. And live your true life perspectives with me, your host, Ashley Burgess. We'll be back this time in three shakes.